has such senses. Atapyata executed penance. Sma in the past. Apila all. Loka planet. Atapanam enlightening. Tapaha penance. Tapiyam extremely hard penance. Tabatam of all the executors of penances. Samahita, thus situated. Translation. Lord Brahma underwent penances for 1,000 years by the calculations of the demigods. He heard this transcendental vibration from the sky and he accepted it as divine. Thus he controlled his mind and senses, and the penances he executed were a great lesson for the living entities. Thus he is known as the greatest of all ascetics. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Lord Brahma heard the occult sound tapa, but he did not see the person who vibrated the sound. And still, he accepted the instruction as beneficial for him. And therefore, he engaged himself in meditation for 1,000 celestial years. One celestial year is equal to 6 times 30 times 12 times 1,000 of our years. So that's 1 celestial year. 6 times 30. 30 would be 30 days, 12 months. What's that?
2,160,000
years. 2,160,000 years. That's in our time.
Is that 1 year? No, that's
1,000
years.
That's 1,000 years of our time. That's, what is it? 1,000, what are you saying?
1,000 years.
1,000 years. That's one of his celestial years equals.
Yeah, one celestial year is that much.
Yeah, 2,000,000.
160,000.
His acceptance of the sound was due to his pure vision of the absolute nature of the Lord. And due to his correct vision, he made no distinction between the Lord and the Lord's instruction. There is no distinction between the Lord and sound vibration coming from him, even though he is not personally present. The best way of understanding is to accept such divine instruction, and Brahma, the prime spiritual master of everyone, is a living example of the process of receiving transcendental knowledge. The potency of transcendental sound is never minimized because the vibrator is apparently absent. Therefore, Srimad Bhagavatam or Bhagavad Gita or any revealed scripture in the world is never to be accepted as an ordinary mundane sound without transcendental potency. One has to receive the transcendental sound from the right source, accept it as a reality, and prosecute the direction without hesitation. The secret of success is to receive the sound from the right source of a bona fide spiritual master. Mundane, manufactured sound has no potency, and as such, seemingly transcendental sound received from an unauthorized person also has no potency. One should be qualified enough to discern such transcendental potency, and either by discriminating or by fortunate chance if one is able to receive the transcendental sound from the bona fide spiritual master, his path of liberation is guaranteed. The disciple, however, must be ready to execute the order of the bona fide spiritual master as Lord Brahma executed the instruction of his spiritual master, the Lord himself. Following the order of the bona fide spiritual master is the only duty of the disciple, and this completely faithful execution of the order of the bona fide spiritual master is the secret of success. Lord Brahma controlled his two grades of senses by means of sense perception and sense organs because he had to engage such senses in the execution of the order of the Lord. Therefore, controlling the senses means engaging them in the transcendental service of the Lord. The Lord's order descends in disciplic succession through the bona fide spiritual master, and thus execution of the order of the bona fide spiritual master is factual control of the senses. Such execution of penance in full faith and sincerity made Brahmaji so powerful that he became the creator of the universe, and because he was able to attain such power, he is called the best amongst all the tapasvis. Let's read the verse again. Divyam sahasabdham mogadashino yanilatmah vijitobha yendriya tatap yatta smakila lokatapaham tapastapi hams tapatam samahita. Lord Brahma underwent penances for 1,000 years by the calculations of the demigods. He heard this vibration from the sky and he accepted it as divine. Thus he controlled his mind and senses, and the penances he executed were a great lesson for the living entities. Thus he is known as the greatest of all ascetics. Very important verse, because they're all important verses. But here, of course, we see the example of Lord Brahma, how he, which is meant for everyone within the universe to follow, that he heard the vibration from the sky. He accepted it as divine, transcendental. He executed the instruction of that sound vibration, tapa, to perform, to control his mind and senses, and thus be have his mind and senses only engaged under the order of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, yeah, practically speaking, Srila Prabhupada said straight out that practically apart from ISKCON, all the leaders, politicians, they're all basically in ignorance, and they're all speculating and have no knowledge of reality, you know, practically whatsoever. So, Prabhupada said, you know, from Gandhi down to his followers, you know, they have no understanding. And when Srila Prabhupada was in Mauritius, he gave a class, just a very simple class, that how the living entity is different from the body. And at the end, one of the members amongst the Hindu community said that he can't accept this statement of the Vedas that living entities can be found even within fire. And Srila Prabhupada questioned him as to why he could not accept that. And he went on to quote that, you know, in the in America, American scientists have proved that there is, you know, that they say, not prove, but they say by their scientific calculations that there is no life within fire. And so Srila Prabhupada said that, so you know, your authority therefore is the Americans. And he said, your authority is the Americans and our authority is the Shastra. And he said that just because you accept the authority of the Americans does not mean you are that your authority is necessarily correct, or that our authority is incorrect, or that you know, there is no life you know, within fire. Living entities cannot exist within fire. So then he went on to quote some scientific evidence that you know, this fellow American, you know, scientist said this. So Srila Prabhupada said, yes, this fellow, so you know, these fellows are your authorities. And he said, and these fellows, they make some statement, and then 10 years later, they will change it. And that is the difficulty with these fellows. And I remember some years ago, so, you know, because when I was first reading Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, in the late 70s, you know, I come across this information that, you know, living entities exist within fire. And I accepted it because it was Shastra. For that reason alone. And I remember having, you know, many conversations arguing this point, you know, with all sorts of scientific personalities. And one day, I was skimming through the newspapers. I don't really read the newspapers. I like to read the headings, so, you know, I skim through the headings. If there's anything that may capture my attention that I can use in preaching, I'll, you know, sometimes look at it. It takes me about 30 seconds to read a newspaper. And I noticed a heading that they found living entities within fire. You know, the scientists, that deep within the earth, where, you know, you have this, you know, they have found that there are living entities that exist, you know, and it is such a fire it is that this is molten rock. You know, like, you see fires that are extremely hot, they'll go through and they'll just, you know, burn down a forest, but all the rocks, you know, they're not touched. So this fire melts rock, turns them into liquid. And they found, so they had it in the newspaper, you know, that we have found living entities are living within that. Which, you know, is exactly what Prabhupada said, that, you know, these fellas, you know, their problem is they'll say one thing and then 10 years later they change it. Whereas, you know, Shastra is, although it seems inconceivable, you know, it is correct. So, you know, for millions of years, those who accept Shastra have had a greater scientific knowledge than, you know, the so-called modern scientists. In fact, it's taken the modern scientists millions of years to catch up with some of the basic understandings of the just on a material platform, really, of the Shastra. You know, also, therefore, of course, this is a very important point. Why is this point very important? Why is that point? Why would it be important for those who want to, you know, who don't have faith in Krishna consciousness? That particular point. What makes that particular point quite significant? You can say. Why is that particular point about living entities not being able to exist within fire particularly important that for us it must be a fact, and for others it's like the moon thing, you know. It's like, you know, the scientists say, you know, they've gone to the moon. We say, well, how can they? The Vedas, you know, say they can't just go there. So, you know, it's a tricky point. So they keep sticking to their story, and we keep sticking to our shastra that, you know, you haven't gone there. And they say we have. But it's like that. So there's something, you know, in that instance. Of course, if they go to the moon, you know, they... counteracts, you know, many of the things that we say in Shastra, you know, quite a significant part of our philosophy. So why is this point about living entities in fire? Yes, he says that, yes, that's the Shastric evidence to prove that living entities can live in fire, that, you know, it's reasonable that, you know, they're all pervading, and also you know, the Chedri and Dayuyam Kledu Sashiyachan, you know, one of those there means that, you know, that in the 23-24 describing how the living entity cannot be burned, the soul cannot be burned as well, and all pervading. So if the soul cannot be burned, why can the living entity not live anywhere? And if the soul is all pervading, so we see that there are living entities in the air, the living entities in the water, on the ground, where else?
Yes.
The sky, everywhere, why not fire? So there's still an important reason, a very important reason why it's particularly significant. That's right. That Krishna spoke the Bhagavad Gita to the sun god. See? Now, if the scientists can prove that there are no living entities within fire, that makes Krishna a liar, doesn't it? And it actually destroys the whole concept of disciplic succession. So, you know, it's very important for them to try to disprove these things, to undermine their philosophy. But Krishna said, you know, what was that? Is that 40 million or 400 million years ago or something like that? 200 million years ago? It's mentioned in the Gita, what is it? It's in the... It's 120 million years ago, Krishna spoke the Bhagavad Gita to the sun god, Vishvan. So, now, this is in the fourth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, so, you know, I remember reading the Bhagavad Gita for the first time, and you come across this verse. Krishna spoke this to the sun god. So all of a sudden, you really have to take a big leap of you're either going to put your faith in the Gita, or from that point on, anything else you hear, you know, from the first few verses, you know, you've got a bit of a summary, you've got the setting of the scene in the first chapter, you get a summary of fixing your mind upon the Supreme Lord and controlling your mind and senses, and, you know, in the and the difference between matter and spirit in the second chapter, you know, how to perform yajna in the third chapter. And then, you know, gradually we're going to enter into the understanding of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and, you know, this science of bhakti yoga, which has been hinted at. So, and then Krishna, you know, drops this one in. I spoke this to the sun god, you know, something like 120 million years ago. So at that point, if you have no faith in sastra, it's very difficult to proceed. You know, people will, you know, they'll read it, they might, and from that point on, of course, many people will read the Gita and they may say, well, you know, we can derive some things, you know, and use some things and reject other things. Of course, you know, you can't accept everything, you know. So it almost gives people that... the good excuse, well, why not interpret it? You know, you can't take it literally, you know, as soon as Krishna says he spoke to the sun god. So from that point on, you know, it's just open to interpretation because it's not real. But, you know, Krishna is you know, throughout the whole Gita, Krishna is maintaining his position as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, for a person who has, you know, even a, you know, just the minimum understanding of God, it's not really difficult, you know, for a person who, that they say, well, you know, God is eternal, you know, he can create everything, all sorts of things. You know. If there's a God, why can't there be a sun god? You know, if there's a divine supreme Lord who controls all of creation, you know, why can't he create a little sun god to control the sun? No, it's not such a big thing. But it's with a little bit of logic. It's for persons who have faith that there, you know, is a supreme personality of God. Because that's the position Krishna is maintaining. You know, within the within those first few verses of the Bhagavad Gita, he describes, you know, he's letting Arjuna know how this science is received through the Parampara system, and ultimately it is coming, it is the science of the eternal relationship between the eternal soul and the eternal supreme personality of Godhead, and that relationship itself is also eternal. The Lord is eternal, the living entity is eternal, and the relationship between them, the activities based upon that relationship, that is all eternal, and that is the science that is being described by Lord Sri Krishna, and if that science, how can that science exist, you know, what is, if he's describing, you know, this supreme transcendental science. Transcendental means it exists beyond time and space. Then, you know, how can we accept that if, you know, there is no existence beyond, you know, matter, beyond time and space? There must be existence beyond time and space. Otherwise, where is knowledge coming from that is transcendental? Transcendental knowledge means it comes, it's existing before material creation, and it is transcendental knowledge means it is knowledge about things that exist beyond material creation, beyond time. So of course, how can you accept that that knowledge is there, and but there is no supreme person or no one who knows that knowledge? You know, what is the possibility of having transcendental knowledge beyond material existence, and but there's no one exists on the transcendental platform. So there's knowledge, but no one to know. Yes, we're talking. I'll get to that. Discipling succession. We're coming down to. We're starting from the top because if you jump to Vrindavan Das Thakur, people don't even accept Arjuna. So if you don't accept Krishna, you won't accept Arjuna. If you don't accept Arjuna, you won't accept Vrindavan Das Thakur. So my purpose is first of all, you know, let us be convinced that there is Krishna. Because once we can accept that Krishna exists, even logically and reasonably, then we can accept Shastra, the Bhagavad Gita, and then we can understand, then we can accept the disciplic succession all the way down to Vrindavan Das Thakur. Otherwise, you know, that's what I said at the very beginning, that in this world, Prabhupada said that practically everyone in this world, and you know, all the leaders, they're all speculating, they're all in complete ignorance, and they have no knowledge at all. They're all fools and rascals. And every time someone mentions something from the Gita or the Srimad Bhagavatam or Shastra, they just wildly speculate upon it, interpret it, or reject it, but you know, they will never accept it because it's Shastra. That's the one thing they won't do. They'll reject it, they'll twist it, they'll change it, they'll add to it, they'll take away from it, but they will never just accept it. But to do that, that is the first point to understand that there is transcendental knowledge, and if there is transcendental knowledge, in other words, you can know things that are beyond material existence. Now, if you can know things beyond material existence, there must be someone beyond material existence who knows that transcendental knowledge. Otherwise, if there's no knower, no conscious person beyond material existence, then how can knowledge be there? Right? The very concept that there's transcendental knowledge means that there must be a person beyond material existence who is conscious. That is a very... You know, therefore, and that... Krishna says, I am that person. And... therefore, and he speaks this Bhagavad Gita, which is a perfect example of transcendental knowledge. It is unrivaled. You know, you can't take another book and rival the Bhagavad Gita. Those who follow the teachings of the Bhagavad Gita, including all the greatest personalities throughout time, from Janaka, you know, because the sun god, Vivishvan, and Ikshvaku, and then coming in the line of Ikshvaku, Lord Ramchandra is coming in that line, and Janaka Maharaj, he followed Bhagavad Gita and become perfect. That is, you know, over 1.5 million years ago. This Arjuna, we see that Arjuna, he accepted the principles of Bhagavad Gita and he became completely transcendentally situated, completely victorious. So it was accepted by Srila Vyasadeva. Srila Vyasadeva compiled all the Vedic literatures. Even if someone presents another book on, you know, Vedic knowledge, that book is something that's, you know, an offshoot or derived from Srila Vyasadeva's teachings. And Srila Vyasadeva presented the Vedanta Sutra to show that although there are other philosophers current at the time of Vyasadeva, Jaimini, Kanika, Apostle Kapila, and so many others, actually he defeated their philosophies as nonsense. So his contemporaries and those coming before him, Srila Vyasadeva, in his Vedanta Sutra, revealed that they are incomplete, and that the knowledge that he is given in the Vedas is the complete and perfect philosophy. So Srila Vyasadeva accepts the Bhagavad Gita, and of course Srila Vyasadeva wrote the Bhagavad Gita within the Mahabharata. So if people present some other book, then that philosophy has already been discarded by Srila Vyasadeva. Practically whatever philosophy you can take, Srila Vyasadeva, in his Vedanta Sutra, he has dismantled. So, before you even write your nonsense book and come up with your philosophy, Srila Vyasadeva has already, disposed of that nonsense philosophy. He is accepting Bhagavad Gita. So, there's, by logic and reason, transcendental knowledge must come down from a supreme transcendental person. Krishna says he is that person. He spoke this knowledge to the sun god, and that knowledge comes down in disciplic succession. So we accept that shastra. Also, I remember when I first, became a Hare Krishna movement, joined the Hare Krishna movement, that they're describing that cow dung is pure. That stool is impure, but cow dung is pure. So, I was just an ordinary boy from the suburbs. And, usually you avoid stool. All of a sudden, reading in the book that you can actually wash things with cow stool. And some people drink the cow urine. Antiseptic, so it's quite a big thing. I mean, those coming from India, it's probably coming from, but for me it was like this is something, it was like as strange as saying, rabbit's poo is something wonderful. It was just a completely new experience for me to hear that. But I accepted that from Shastra. And years later, that the scientific evidence is that, they're quite satisfied there is something, antiseptic in it, and it has those purifying characteristics. The Ganges water. We're told that the Ganges is sacred, completely pure, and that even when you go and swim in the Ganges, I went to the Ganges, saw some dead bodies floating down, some dead animals, there's some foam, there's this, there's that, you name it, it was just floating parts. But Shastra says it's pure. And that, you just sort of push aside anything that may be on the surface, but you go in there and take your bath, which I did. But, scientifically also they have proven that. There was a documentary that I saw some time ago that it has an ability that no other river on this earth has, there is something to do with the oxygen and the living entities that manifest, tiny little living entities, bacteria, what have you, that manifest within the Ganges water, that they consume pollutants many, many times more than any other river. So even scientifically, they look at it and they see it is far more oxygenated than any other river, and that the particular living entities that live there exclusively can consume and purify pollutants within the Ganges water quicker than anywhere else, any other river in the world. And therefore, it always remains one of the purest rivers, even though there is more going into the Ganges, as far as pollutants, than some of the other rivers in the world. But they actually say it is, considered quite a very healthy river. It constantly purifying itself. So, these things we accept from Shastra, and this is our process. Therefore, when, as Prabhupada mentions here in the purport, says, his acceptance of the sound was due to his pure vision of the absolute nature of the Lord. Now, in itself, if someone says that within fire there are living entities, and it takes modern science, thousands and thousands of years to understand what is inconceivable to understand, what do we understand about the person who spoke that 5,000 years ago? That their knowledge is perfect. That before modern science, all of these things, if someone's saying something and it's constantly being proved perfect, and they're not like 5 years ahead of their time, 10 years ahead of their time, 100 years, 500 years, they're thousands and millions of years ahead of their time. It says that person is perfect. If they're speaking perfect knowledge, they're not going to the laboratories and doing all sorts. There's no research. You won't see Krishna, he goes into Vrindavan, at the back of Vrindavan they've got the laboratories, he gets in there, he gets his test tubes and does a bit of research. There's some, there is living entities within fire. I'm going to put that in my book. It's just perfect knowledge without research. If someone is constantly giving perfect knowledge without research, that person is perfect. Therefore, Brahma here, he accepted that his acceptance of the sound was due to his pure vision of the absolute nature of the Lord. And due to his direct vision, he made no distinction between the Lord and the Lord's instruction. There is no difference between the Lord and sound vibration coming from him, even though he is not personally present. That is the best way of understanding. The best way of understanding is to accept such divine instruction, and Brahma, the prime spiritual master of everyone, is a living example of this process of receiving transcendental knowledge. The potency of transcendental sound is never minimized because the vibrator is apparently absent. Therefore, Srimad Bhagavatam, or Bhagavad Gita, or any revealed scripture in the world is never to be accepted as an ordinary mundane sound without transcendental potency. So, here, Brahma could not even see Krishna, who is, he's hearing this transcendental vibration, ultimately coming from Krishna through his transcendental potencies. And Brahma is understanding that this sound vibration is transcendental and perfect, therefore it is coming from the perfect and transcendental person, although I cannot see that person. But if something is transcendental and perfect, even though I cannot perceive that person, that where the sound is coming from, it does not diminish the potency of the transcendental sound vibration. So which again is particularly important because we don't see Krishna. In ISKCON, we have millions of people, and of course, the congregation in India, there are millions of people who accept Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But we're not seeing Krishna directly. For all intents and purposes, we will wait until some fortunate lifetime or till we go back to Godhead, we will see him. But we are hearing that same transcendental sound coming through the disciplic succession. And it does not matter whether Krishna is within our vision or not within our vision, that transcendental sound is complete and perfect and holds transcendental potency, and it comes down through the disciplic succession. And one who receives that transcendental knowledge from the spiritual master, situated in disciplic succession, that Srila Prabhupada says, it is as good as Krishna personally speaking to you. And that's how, therefore, we accept the spiritual master to be as good as God. There is no difference. It is not that, I'm getting some instructions through the spiritual master, but one day I'll hear from Krishna and that'll be better. No. It is the same potency. There is no diminishing. In fact, Krishna likes to allow his devotees to do things with more potency than what he himself does. We see that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu delivered, he preached throughout India, of course, he delivered the whole universe. But, externally it appeared that he preached throughout India, and he allowed Srila Prabhupada to spread that teaching, all over the world through his potent words. And there is a potency there. Now, when you hear Srila Prabhupada speaking, he wasn't, it wasn't the fact that he was, one of the world's greatest speakers, in the sense that, he had a perfect English, or, in fact, even now a lot of devotees struggle to hear his taste, because it's very difficult for people to understand his accent. It's very difficult. Sometimes Srila Prabhupada used to make up his own words. Auspicity. Krishna consciousness is spreading auspicity. That's the Prabhupada word. There are some words Prabhupada just make them up. They sounded right. They seem to have, we understand it from Prabhupada, but you don't find them in the dictionary. He wasn't, a stand-up comedian, that he just attracted people by his comedy, by his stress sense, or by his youthful beauty. he spoke very simple, And his message, he wasn't, he used to quite often repeat the very basic philosophy, you're not this body, he wasn't always saying things which are, just really startling. I can't believe what Prabhupada just said. Every time you hear him talk, he just says these wild things. Telling you very basic, simple truths time and time again. And people would, and sometimes people were not even seeing Prabhupada personally, but, those words he spoke, he translated the books, gave the purports in his Bhagavatams, and through the dictaphone, And therefore, when we're reading, practically we're hearing Srila Prabhupada through his books, people will pick up a book and they'll want to, you know, become Krishna conscious. You know, something which takes millions and millions of lifetimes, and they'll pick up one of Prabhupada's books. They'll have, you know, 10-second vision of Srila Prabhupada. They'll hear, you know, one lecture, and they'll become Krishna conscious. And even people from, you know, religions, the Christians, the Muslims, the Buddhists, the Kamis, you know, they couldn't believe. You know, this Krishna consciousness movement is spreading like, you know, wildfire. You know, they couldn't understand it. It's just taking off. You know, there's like, but not just with, you know, some of the elderly ladies, you know, and some of the elderly gentlemen who are perhaps, you know, their life is over, and, you know, they've got, you know, material life is finished, and, you know, they sort of wander into the church. The young people, you know, 17, 18, 19, 20, with their whole lives ahead of them, they're just dedicating themselves fully to this Krishna consciousness movement after some contact with Prabhupada, because there was a potency there. Because he accepted transcendental knowledge through the disciplic succession, and that transcendental knowledge had the full potency of being in the personal presence with Krishna. And we follow that same principle, that we accept the, we hear, we try to follow the instructions of the spiritual master, and by doing that there is a potency there, and that potency is the same potency as if Krishna were personally speaking to us and standing before us as he was with Arjuna. That is how we accept it. So Prabhupada says that this is the secret of success. He says, following the order of the bona fide spiritual master is the only duty of the disciple, and this completely faithful execution of the order of the bona fide spiritual master is the secret of success. And of course, therefore, we have so many wonderful literatures coming down in disciplic succession. We're very, very fortunate. You know, we have the Bhagavad Gita, we have the you know, the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is, you know, the culmination of all Srila Vyasadeva's, you know, great literary achievements is the Srimad Bhagavatam. We have that full Srimad Bhagavatam, 18,000 verses describing Lord Sri Krishna. Vrindavan Das Thakur, we have the Chaitanya Charitamrita, perfectly describing, you know, the because he was coming in disciplic succession and describing Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He is coming in disciplic succession from the Goswamis of Vrindavan. The Goswamis of Vrindavan coming in disciplic succession from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu coming in disciplic succession from Ishvara Puri, Madhavendra Puri, you know, Madhvacharya, like this. But even though that disciplic succession is there, Kali Yuga is so powerful that even those in the Madhva, you know, Sampradaya, even in the Vaishnava Sampradaya, you know, they find it very, very difficult to accept the teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Because that lack of faith actually in the disciplic succession and the Shastra. So we're very fortunate in this Krishna consciousness movement, that exactly as Lord Brahma did. Now this is in the first day of creation. So this is going back to the very first day of this, when this universe was created, the very first moments, and then Lord Brahma is there, and the cyclic succession is so much preserved by the transcendental system that billions and billions and billions of years later, we are following the exact same process that Brahma followed. No one can criticize, well, you're doing something new. Oh, in ISKCON, you're doing something. What Brahma did at the very beginning of creation, we are still doing exactly today. A It was nothing new. That we accept Shastra as it is. But that Shastra, you must hear that Shastra coming in disciplic succession. Therefore, we get the blessings of Lord Brahmaji, Lord Shiva, all the demigods, all the acharyas, all the great avatars, all the great saintly personalities. Just as they all respect Lord Brahma, they are all offering us, praises, good work, congratulations, well done. We fully applaud you. We fully, condone what you are doing, what Brahma did. We applaud, and what you are doing exactly the same. You do that, and you will definitely become successful. So this is a Krishna consciousness movement. So if anyone has any questions or sometimes, even when your house is burning down, you can't see the fire because you're asleep.
Yeah. So, but going further...
Nor can you smell the smoke.
Yeah. Going further, there are several material elements. Mm-hmm. And in Shastras, there are multiple descriptions of, so is it, and also, we can many times hear that, by performing the austerities, all the demigods were terrified or stuff like that.
So that will take what?
When someone performs
austerities, yeah.
The demigods become terrified because of austerities. So is it possible that we should actually perceive that in a way that, the planets of the demigods are, the material planets, but on the subtle, made of subtle material elements, like made of the, for example, mind, and because mind, false ego, and intelligence are subtle material elements. Mm-hmm. So, and when you perform an austerity, in that way you kind of influence this material element, and in that way it's easy to understand how you actually influence the planets of the demigods. Is this the right way to think?
For a lot of things, we can understand to a certain degree, the capacity and the bodies and what have you and their longevity, is quite inconceivable. Even the material things in this universe are quite inconceivable. Just like Yamaraj. Yamaraj is a demigod. Now, within his mind is recorded the activities of all living entities within this universe. So when a spirit soul leaves their body and Yamaraj judges them, it's recorded within his subtle body and he perceives their exact activities and he can give their judgment. Now how do we, you know, even on a material platform, something we just accept, you know, it's we get a glimpse that, you know, their material potencies, their bodies, which are, you know, have all sorts of mystic cities and subtle potencies and abilities that we don't. But also, we understand that they are. It's not just that they're demigods that makes them particularly wonderful. It's because they're empowered by the Supreme Lord. So Yamaraj, even amongst the demigods, other demigods can't do what he does, because he's empowered by the Supreme Lord. So even, you know, here we see that it says Brahma. Such execution of penance in full faith and sincerity made Brahmaji so powerful that he became the creator of the universe. And because he was able to attain such power, he is called the best amongst the tapasvis. See? So, from our position, we don't necessarily have to understand, nor is it possible, the bodies and planets of the demigods, but we just have to understand this part, that as they engage their senses in the service of the Lord, as is their duty, the Lord empowers them to do, you know, their inconceivable activities like that. And that part we need to understand. That's the main part. If we miss that part, because, you know, what happens is that this is in religion generally, this is the beauty of Srila Prabhupada's teaching as well, is that, you know, in most religions and in Hinduism, people who read the Gita and they read the Puranas and they read Chaitanya Charitamrita, and they can talk to you for hours and they can tell you all sorts of things, but the things that Prabhupada said, they don't say. And it's the main thing. You know? Prabhupada is empowered, and those who follow him are empowered to take you back to Godhead. They're empowered to help you to understand that. Their mission is not to make us, you know, become walking encyclopedias with a great knowledge of the, you know, the universe and heaven. We know as much as we need to know to do our service to Krishna, and to know that we are guaranteed, you know, a devotee, because they have faith in Krishna, Shastra, Guru, the disciplic succession, we are 100% guaranteed we will go back to Godhead if we just keep following the process. And whatever I need to know to do that, Krishna will empower me to understand and perform. That's the path that we should understand. That should be our main meditation. That how can I, you know, take shelter of the instructions of the spiritual master with complete faith and surrender and go back to life? Our intelligence should be always thinking in that terms. And if Krishna desires it for, you know, just like in Mayapur, they're building the planetarium, you know, with a, it shows the whole universe so people can go there. So there are some devotees within our society that Krishna specifically wants to know as much as possibly they can know about, you know, the upper planetary systems and their subtle bodies and so many different things. So if someone has that interest, and that is part of their service, then certainly Krishna, that understanding will come. Not by just sitting in class and discussing it, but it will come in relationship to the service that you're doing. If you have a service to do, Krishna will reveal so much knowledge that is required for your service. Otherwise, even to discuss it, and it's not particularly in relationship to your service, and it may, in one sense, be, we're not quite concentrating enough on how to go back to Godhead by taking shelter of the spiritual master, Krishna may not necessarily oblige. So, you know, there are many, many fascinating things about this universe and the demigods and what have you. But time is very short. We may not be alive tomorrow. And if this were our last day, have we understood that, yes, I know how to go back to Godhead. What I'm doing today is guaranteeing me to go back to Godhead. First, fix ourselves in that. And my activities are completely in line with that realization. That is our main meditation.
On the point that you said, most important thing is to take Gurupada Ashraya, Rupa Goswami's first section, Gurupada Ashraya, shelter of the spiritual master, and service to the spiritual master. Then only you believe all the things, otherwise everything goes over the head.
Even if we describe those things and we read them, we'll not necessarily understand them.
Yeah, but following this logic, we shouldn't study, you know, anything at all.
No, no.
Just, you know, serve our spiritual master and inflict the nursing. So why study?
Well, you know, for instance, Prabhupada, we study because Prabhupada said that the devotees should read these books at least 2 hours a day. So, you know, Prabhupada wrote these books, and just like now we're studying. But study means that, just like here, Srila Prabhupada has given a purport. So, study means that when we have heard this one verse, Prabhupada would, you know, has given us instructions that of all things you can understand from this verse, make sure that your mind is fixed upon these things fully, properly. Then, you know, if a person has interest and inclination and they want to serve Krishna in a particular way and other, you know, further research is wanted, then, you know, a person can do that. So, but we're not saying that. So, you know, I don't mean that, nor does Prabhupada that. But I am making a strong point, the same point that Srila Prabhupada made practically all over the world, that, you know, even people who read the scriptures and even you know, people who follow the Vaishnava line, you know, we have a tendency to not quite understand how limited our time is in this world, and that if we understand that one thing, if we can have full faith in the spiritual master and the disciplic succession, and then follow those instructions, we're guaranteed to go back to Godhead. So if that is there correctly, then all other lines of research, you know, are not out of the question. But of course, if that part is not there, and we spend 10, 20 years, even within ISKCON, then, you know, we can actually leave our body and rather than go back to the spiritual world, we may come back, which is, you know, very risky, especially in Kali Yuga. So we're not saying, you know, don't research or don't ask questions, that's sure Prabhupada has given so many books so that we can research to our heart's content. We can read these books and study and hear from them, and he's given us so many books that in our lifetime, practically, you'll not really be able to, you know, properly, you'll get a, you know, it's very difficult to properly study all the Srila Prabhupada's books. He's given us so much information, just his books alone. So he's not saying don't study, but don't miss the main points, that's all. And some of those things and some things are not required to look into too much. But that's, I'm not saying that that's one. Is that right? Any other comments or questions? Any other questions?